Dr. Earl Marsh. Earl wrote the second edition big book story, Physician, Heal Thyself. This story can be found in the second, third, and fourth editions of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a close friend of Bill Wilson. Dr. Marsh was the co-chairman of the 20th Anniversary Convention's medical panel. He was sober since June of 1953. Dr. Earl Marsh died on January the 13th, 2003, in Walnut Creek, California. The story, Physician, Heal Thyself, by Dr. Earl M., San Francisco Bay Area, California, appears on page 393 in the second edition and page 345 in the third edition of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Earl had his last day of drinking and using drugs on June the 15th, 1953. An AA friend, Harry, took him to his first meeting the following week, the Tuesday night Mill Valley AA group, which met in Wesley Hall at the Methodist Church. There were only five people there, all men, a butcher, a carpenter, a baker, and his friend Harry H., a mechanic inventor. He loved AA from the start, and though he has been critical of the program at times, his devotion has remained constant. Described in his story heading as a psychiatrist and surgeon, he was qualified in many fields. During his long career, he has been a prominent professor of obstetrics and gynecology and an outstanding clinician at the University of California at San Francisco. He was a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and of the International College of Surgeons, a diplomat of the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, board-certified psychiatrist, vice president of the American Association of Marital and Family Therapists, and a lecturer on human sexuality. He was raised in San Francisco, but was born on August the 3rd, 1911, in Omaha, Nebraska, and lived there until he was 10. His parents were alcoholics. In Omaha, they lived on the wrong side of the tracks, and he wore hand-me-down clothes from relatives. He was ashamed of this and could not begin to accept it until years later. He revealed none of this in his story. Instead, he talked about how successful he had been in virtually everything he had done. He said he lost nothing that most alcoholics lose, and described his skid row as the skid row of success. But in 1989, he wrote an autobiography by the same title, which reveals much more of his story. During his first year in AA, he went to New York and met Bill Wilson. They became very close and talked frequently, both on the phone and in person. He frequently visited Bill at his home, Stepping Stones. He called Bill one of his sponsors and said there was hardly a topic they did not discuss in detail. He took a fifth step with Bill, and Bill often talked over his depressions with Earl. In a search for serenity, Earl studied and practiced many forms of religion: Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, and ancestor worship. He has long been a strong advocate for the cross addiction theory and predicted that over time we would see the evolution of Addictions Anonymous. When he was sober about 10 years, Earl developed resentments against newcomers and began a group in San Francisco for old-timers. It was called the Forum. He wrote a credo for it designed of 10 steps for chemically dependent people. He felt that addiction represents a single disease with many open doors leading to it: alcohol, opiates, amphetamines, cocaine, etc. Most of the Forum members were also devoted AA members. He also established a new kind of AA group which used confrontational techniques. Some AA members disliked it intensely, while others seemed to gain a great deal from it. Many alcoholics make geographic changes when they are drinking, but Earl seems to have made his after achieving sobriety. He has lived in many places, both in this country and abroad, traveled around the world 3 times, and attended AA everywhere he went. He also married several times. In 1968, he divorced his first wife, Mary, whom he had married in 1940. She once told him she had a great respect for him as a doctor, but none as a human being. He admitted that he'd had affairs during the marriage, even after joining AA. His relationship with their only child, Jane, who was a very successful opera singer, was strained, but he gave her an opportunity to air her feelings in his book. She wrote that when she received the gold medallion at the International Tchaikovsky Voice Competition in Moscow in 1966, a high honor, her father did not attend. Some people told her that it was not easy for him to see her become such a success, to be so in the public eye. She added that their paths were still separate, but that she did not ever totally close the door because he was her father. In the 1960s, he was experimenting with encounter and sensitivity awareness groups, which were then in vogue. At one of the encounter marathons, he met his second wife, Katie, and within a year they were married and soon moved to Lake Tahoe. They lived separately except for two brief periods, and after a few years were divorced. Later, he accepted a job with the U.S. State Department at the University of Saigon Medical School in Korea. He spent 5 years there, after which he returned to San Francisco, hoping to rekindle his marriage to Katie. In September 1975, he moved to Hazard, Kentucky, to work at the Hazard Appalachian Regional Hospital. There he met his third wife, Frida, 30 years younger than he was. Frida came from a truly humble background. She was the daughter of a miner who had died of black lung disease. She and her six brothers were raised in a typical two-room coal miner's house in Hazard. During his relationship with her and her family, he was able to put to rest some ghosts concerning his Nebraska background. This wonderful family helped him to reevaluate his memories of Omaha. In 1978, his feet began again to itch. He accepted a short-term job in Nepal. When he was offered a long-term assignment, Frida and his stepsons did not want to leave Kentucky. Disappointed, he returned to Kentucky and obtained work as a gynecologist in a family planning clinic and also lectured to medical students on human sexuality at the University of Louisville Medical School. When he moved again, this time to Kirkland, Washington, Frida again refused to leave Kentucky. They were divorced soon after. They remained friendly and talked to one another on the phone about twice a year. From all his travels, he always seemed to return to the San Francisco Bay Area. In 1980, he accepted a position as medical director of the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. There he met his fourth wife, Mickey. She was a PhD candidate at the Institute. He described her as a vibrant, open, honest, direct woman, without pretense, non-threatening, sexually on fire, lacking in prejudice, and tolerant about all aspects of life, including human sexuality. She was already an Al-Anon member when they met, having been married to an alcoholic. She also made contributions in the field of alcoholism and recovery at Merritt Peralta Chemical Dependence Recovery Hospital in Oakland, California. They married and remained together until her death in 2000. His book is dedicated to her. I talked to Earl on July 27, 2001. He told me he still gets to an AA meeting almost every day. His eyesight is not too good, but otherwise he's full of vim and vigor. From his voice, I would have taken him for a man of 40. He missed the AA International Convention last year because of Mickey's ill health, but he hopes to attend one in 2005. This part of the reading comes from an interview with the Grapevine, October 1995 edition. The Grapevine. Have you had periods in sobriety that were emotionally difficult? Dr. Earl. Oh my, yes. So did Bill. You know that Bill had a long depression. Let me tell you how I got at some emotional rest. Years ago, a medical college in the South asked me to go to Saigon as a visiting professor to help the Vietnamese set up a new department in gynecology and obstetrics. Before I left, I went back to see Bill and Lois and Marty M. and some others, and I spent about 8 or 9 days back in New York before I went to Asia. Bill took me to the airport, and on the way there, he said, "You know, Earl, I've been sober longer than anyone else in our organization. After all, I was sober 6 months when I met Bob. But," he said, "I don't have too much peace of mind," he said. "I feel down in the dumps a hell of a lot." So I said, "So do I, Bill. I don't have much serenity either. I was sober by this time, maybe 16, 17 years. He said, "Do me a favor. When you get over to Asia, see if you can investigate firsthand the various religions in Asia. That means Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, and Confucianism, and ancestral worship and the whole shebang." And I said, "All right, I'll do it." And he said, "Stay in contact with me, and maybe we can find something in those religions. After all, we've taken from William James, we've taken from all the Christian religions. Let's see what these others have." So I hugged Bill and got on the plane and went to Asia. I had 3 or 4 rest and relaxation periods a year, but I didn't rest and relax. I was determined to find something that would bring peace and serenity to me. I spent a lot of time in Nepal and in Indonesia. I spent time in India. I went into these places looking, looking, looking for serenity. I spent 2 or 3 years just driving to find out something. I tried meditation. I read the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas, everything. I went to an ashram on the southeast coast of India, run by a very famous guru and saint. There were about 150 East Indians there. I was the only Westerner, and they welcomed me. I wore a dhoti, that's a white skirt that men wear, and I wore one like the rest of them did. We all ate on the ground on a big banana leaves, over a yard long. There would be food on the banana leaves, and you'd make it into a ball with your right hand and throw it into your mouth. There were no knives or forks at all, so I did what they did. I didn't like the taste very much, but I did it. I happened to be there at the time of the feast of Diwali. Diwali is like our time of Easter. It's the time of renewal. We were awakened on the early morning of Diwali, around 2 o'clock. This ashram was located at the base of a mountain known as Arunachal. Now, Arunachal in Hindi means sun, and the myth goes that one of the gods, Rama, lives inside of this mountain. We were told we had to walk around the base of this mountain, which was a 10-mile walk, and as we walked, we were yelling to Rama, "If you do it in a very firm and believing way, it's said that Rama will come up and wave at you and bless you." I was there, and I did it. We walked around, and we were yelling, "Rama, Rama, Rama," hoping that Rama would come up and bless us all. They all walked in their bare feet. I didn't. I wore my shoes. Gosh, I was tired. But I walked all night long, the whole distance. After the event, I came back to my little apartment in Saigon, ready to return to my medical work. I was so beaten because I'd been driving and searching and clenching my fists for almost 3 years, and I kept writing too ill about all this, you know. And I came into my apartment, and I suddenly collapsed down on the floor. I lay there breathing kind of heavily, and I said to myself, "Oh, to hell with serenity. I don't care if it ever comes." And I meant it. And do you know what happened? All of a sudden, the craving to find serenity utterly evaporated, and there was serenity. The trouble was the search, looking out there for what was right here. You know, we only have this given second. There's always now. Once I realized that, serenity became mine. Now I'm speaking about emotions. I haven't sought one single thing since that day because it's all right here. I often say to people at meetings, "You're trying to find peace of mind out there? I don't blame you, but it isn't out there. It's here, right here." Now, do I think this is a supreme being, a god? Sure I do, of course. But do I have any religious beliefs? No. Religion demands that you do certain things, and my life in AA isn't like that. AA is a very loose-jointed organization. People say there is only one way to work the program. That's crazy. We talk about the suggested steps, which are guides to recovery, not absolutes. Chapter 5 of the Big Book says no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. If we had all the members of AA standing here, everyone would have a different idea of what AA is all about. Bill's idea was different from Dr. Bob's, yours will be different from mine, and yet they're all based on one thing, and that is don't drink and use the 12 steps in your own way.